Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicmultiverse.com. I'm Seb Patrick, and joining me to help make sense of the comics behind the movies is...
James Hentz!
Yes, so Joe is still away on honeymoon. In fact, he's away at both the time that we're recording this, and probably he'll still be away by the time you're listening to it as well. Back before Joe originally went away, our plan was to do two full pre-recorded episodes, and you'll already have heard the Batman Returns one that we put out last week. But we didn't get around to recording a second one before he left. So in its place, we're going to do this bonus episode this week, and we may get another bonus episode in next week before he returns to do his comic book review catch-up in early September. And what we thought we'd do for this bonus episode was to catch up on some news, because I don't think we've covered any news at all in August, have we? Because I think Suicide Squad was right at the start of the month,
yep.
Which obviously didn't have news on it because we go straight into doing the film. And then we had some minisodes and the Batman episode, which, because it was a pre-record, we didn't get to do any news either. But over August, there has been a reasonable amount of major comic book, TV and movie news, even just in the past week or so. There's been a fair bit, so we thought it was about time we caught up with some of that, gave you our thoughts and gave you some context around things that you may not be aware of if you didn't already know. Also, we've had it suggested to us by a listener that maybe we could take the opportunity while Joe's away to recommend some comics that we wouldn't necessarily get around to recommending in relation to a movie. So obviously there are loads of comics out there that we love that may not ever have a movie that in some way relates to them. So towards the end of this podcast, we're going to do a little recommendation section. Obviously, they're not things that we're telling Joe to go and read, although if he wants to, he's welcome to, and we could spin another minisode out of that in a quiet week. But it's just a chance for us to talk about a couple of comics that we probably wouldn't otherwise have been able to talk about on the podcast. But before we do that, let's rattle through a whole bunch of news. And to start with, I think we'll look over at TV, or more specifically, internet TV, with the news that Hulu, the US-based subscription streaming service, have ordered a pilot for an adaptation of Runaways. James, do you want to tell us a bit about what Runaways is?
So when did it start? Like, sort of early noughties superhero comic by Brian K. Vaughan, who went on to write for things like Lost and what else did he do after Lost?
Are you talking just TV?
Just
or
in TV,
comics?
Yeah, because he was quite a big, he's quite a big TV writer, isn't he, these days?
I don't know what else he's done in TV. I think, oh no, he did, he also created, whatever he created, but he was showrunner of Under the Dome, which yeah. I think sank without trace. Yeah,
but yeah, like he's done a bunch of popular comics as well. He did Why the Last Man and Paper Girls.
Why the Last Man, Ex Machina, obviously Saga is his big one. That's,
yeah, you know, The Private Eye.
Is that Image's top-selling title at the moment, Saga?
Quite possibly, yeah. It may well be. It's got to be like Saga or Wicked or something, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's recently launched... Walking Dead's probably Image's biggest Saga.
Oh, yeah.
But that's an outlier anyway. But yeah, and he's recently launched Paper Girls. I mean, he is sort of... I mean, he had dabbled in superhero stuff for a while. Like he did some Ultimate X-Men, and he did a Spider-Man Doctor Octopus thing around about the time of Spider-Man. One of the many Doctor Octopus related comics that you mentioned were coming out around the time of Spider-Man 2. But yeah, I mean, ever since moving into first at Wildstorm with Ex Machina and Vertigo with Why the Last Man, he's kind of been and then over to Image, he's been like probably the biggest name indie comics writer, if you can call it indie when his stuff sells as much as it does. But
yeah,
in terms of publishers, you know, outside Marvel and DC, I mean, he's someone whose name will sell a new launch in a way that maybe nobody else but Mark Miller or Robert Kirkman probably would. Mm-hmm. So. But Runaways, yeah, was what kind of one of his early successes at Marvel. 2003 it was, actually. I thought it was about 2001, but it was 2003. In fact, I've realised that I wrote about it quite recently from the Panini things that I do, and so I should have remembered that detail more specifically. But they did a short-lived imprint called Tsunami, which was them trying to appeal to...
It wasn't even like an imprint, though, was it? It was like a... It was just like, it was more of a marketing initiative. Like, the books weren't branded Tsunami. It was just a kind of umbrella term.
I think very briefly they were. It's just that, like, it lasted for such a short time and stuff like Runaways came out of it and outlasted it. But I think, like, I think it was technically an imprint when it started, because I think they were publishing it in the digest format, weren't they? Which was kind of aimed at...
They were certainly collecting it in the digest format. Mm. Because it was aimed at young readers. So yeah, like the concept of Runaways was that a bunch of teenage kids discover that their parents were supervillains and decide to run away, like hence the name.
Yeah, they're not a band with Joan Jett in.
Yeah, I mean, did you read it at the time?
I didn't read it at the time. I remember borrowing a collection of it off somebody a few years ago, so quite a while after. I can't remember if I got as far as reading, because the other prominent thing about it was that Joss Whedon did a run on it.
Yeah, he did six issues.
Which I get the impression, actually, surprisingly for a Joss Whedon thing, and surprisingly given the target audience of the original run, I think Whedon's run actually didn't go down super well with fans of Vaughn's run. But yeah, I don't think I got as far as that. I think I read maybe one or two volumes of it, but I wasn't really aware of it at the time that it was coming.
Yeah,
out.
I mean, I picked it up when they published like the massive oversized hardcovers, because it got like massive word of mouth. So they promoted it hard and did a second season of it and everything. And I think the Whedon stuff was the last thing I read. Like, I was never... Like, even though I was buying it in that, like, stupid expensive format, like, I was never that into it. Like, I ended up selling those books on, like, probably close to 10 years ago now. Like,
It is the kind of book that you can imagine, and what it reminds me of in terms of having a similar audience as well would probably be the original Young Avengers run. Like, if you're a certain age that it catches you at just the right time... you're going to be completely obsessed with it in terms of like what it's like and the characters that it's about and the way that it focuses on those characters and what it does with them. Like, I mean, it's a very character driven thing and a very sort of, you know, teenagers discovering themselves kind of thing, except, you know, they just happen to have kind of crazy powers or in one case be friends with a dinosaur. you know, I mean, I can totally get why it's got a fan base that is very ardent about it. But yeah, I don't know how much crossover appeal it has beyond that audience. And I think that's why, like, even though there are people who will talk about it so favourably and remember it so fondly, it's not really been something that's been like a sustained brand that Marvel could ever really do anything else with.
Yeah, like the characters kind of got scattered around different properties in the end. Like that's the thing, they're all good characters. It's just like the plot itself was very trad superhero and not in an original way. Like, it felt like the kind of TV show that they're presumably going to make, which is that just something I was already too old for when it when it was coming out. So
well, yeah, so this pilot is coming from Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who created Gossip Girl, Chuck, and The O.C. So,
so I mean, that's the sort of ballpark for the Runaway show, which suggests to me I'm probably not going to like it that much.
No, I mean, again, it puts you in mind of Young Avengers as well, sort of with Alan Heinberg having done Young Avengers coming off the OC.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you were to suggest somebody who could do a version of Runaways that would appeal to Runaways' original audience, that seems to be fairly strongly in that wheel arch.
Yeah.
Apparently, there was actually a script for a movie kicking around from Drew Pearce. I don't know if that is in any way being used or playing into this.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote that before doing Iron Man 3. I mean, that was the film, that was the thing that got Marvel's attention.
Yeah.
Like, he not had no a runaway. Heroics, I'm not then. Sure. It might have even been a spec script, but they got him off the back of that and put him on Iron Man 3. So, I mean,
No heroics on the podcast. We probably should, shouldn't
we? Yeah, we probably should.
That would be good. Yeah. No, not that anybody can really watch it, but
or can watch it.
We should cover it anyway. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Drew Pearce, we are fans of Drew Pearce.
Yeah, so like part of me would have preferred to see that.
Mm.
But you know, not everything has to be just for me. I mean, one thing that I do wonder is that apparently they've announced, I think they announced that there would be 6 characters in it, and I wonder if there'll be the original 6, because part of me just thinks, like, how are you going to do a dinosaur on a TV budget and not have it look horrendous?
Yeah. And they have said that they are going to have Gert and Old Lace.
Oh, have they definitely said that then?
No, I'm asking.
I know, I'm not sure. I just, I assume they will do the original 6 lineup.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I'm looking forward to seeing Nico, because Nico's my favourite character out of that bunch. Molly's a great character. Chase and Alex, I could barely tell apart.
Hmm. I wonder, actually, because isn't there at least one mutant in there?
Yeah, Molly's a mutant. That's a good point.
Yeah, so I just wonder if that'll have an effect. I always kind of, in terms of where I framed it, I always kind of thought of Runaways as being kind of an X-book anyway. But, you know, obviously it's not. Then, you know, they're not X-Men characters, and they're not all mutants. But I think it's maybe partly because because Joss Whedon wrote some of it, and partly because around that time, like, X-Men would have been, I think, where you would have seen new books and concepts that were intended to appeal to teenagers. You know,
yeah.
That's where Marvel were pushing some kind of, I'm thinking of things like NYX and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, Tsunami, like, there was at least, I can't remember if NYX was a Tsunami book, but certainly Sentinel was one of them. And that was definitely an X-Men thing.
So I guess our line on this then is that it could potentially be interesting and seems like the right hands for the property, but we ourselves may not be super interested in it because we're old guys and it's not really for us.
Yeah, I hope it does well. Like, it's a book with a very devoted following, and I hope they can translate it to TV. I mean, it's the thing that I find strange is that it's on Hulu, so it's going to be kind of off on its own. It's going to be like Supergirl was on CBS. It's going to be sort of off in its own island of continuity, presumably. Like, people get really het up about the MCU's TV links being quite weak, so it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
Yeah. Yeah, presumably this won't be a part of anything like that. I mean, it couldn't. I mean, is it Marvel Studios in any way, or?
Yeah, it's Marvel TV, like Jeff Loeb's looking after it, so theoretically it will be in with all that, but at the same time I'll be very surprised if you get much in the way of like crossovers or references or anything.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that one. Moving over to movies, and there has apparently been a shortlist of potential Captain Marvel directors leaked. So I guess this is kind of pinch of salt territory. But three women who have all been linked with directing the film are Nikki Caro, who has... I'm looking at James's notes here, and he's put a bunch of films I've never heard of. just looking up if she's done anything.
Yeah, I was researching her, and she She did a film called The Whale Rider, a couple of years ago, which the Mary Sue said had already previously identified as one of their top 50 female directed films to watch. So, I mean, she's obviously got the credentials, but I looked at her CV and just nothing jumped out at me as familiar.
Yeah. Leslie Linker-Glatter, who has directed a whole bunch of TV, including episodes of Mad Men, also Heroes and Homeland.
She's done every major TV. Like, if anyone was ready to cross over into feature directing, it's her.
And, you know, Mad Men is always very stylishly directed.
Yep, she did the episode A Guy Walks Into an Ad Agency, which I don't remember, but sounds good.
Yeah, no, that was, it's the one with the lawnmower. Guy walks into an advertising agency. It's one of the
best episodes then. Okay.
Yeah. So that potentially bodes well. Lorena Scafaria, who wrote rather than directed Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, a film which stars previous podcast stars Michael Cera and Kat Dennings, and is one of those films that I feel like I shouldn't have liked, because it should be an annoying indie comedy that's really kind of self-consciously quirky. And I remember quite enjoying it when I watched it. And I don't know how much of that was just to do with the fact that it had Kat Dennings in it, but I do actually remember quite enjoying that film.
Yeah, I had exactly the same thing. I was like, this could be irritating, but the leads are really engaging, so it works just on that level. I mean, my hope is that she will do Captain Marvel, and then because she's got previous with Kat Dennings, Darcy will be in Captain Marvel, because like there's easy ways to get her in. Like, she was an intern for an astrophysicist.
Yeah,
like, why wouldn't she be in there if Captain Marvel was being dealt with? So I've started a hashtag that I want everyone to retweet. Is hashtag Darcy in Captain Marvel. It's never too early. And
there are multiple ways that can be taken. But that's a bit long for a hashtag.
Yeah, I don't care.
Need to work on it, chip it down a bit. I suppose it gets, you don't need to add anything to it.
Yeah, exactly.
It gets across.
Just tweet the hashtag.
Yeah. Okay. A name that's, I mean, so looking at those three, I mean, it seems pretty clear that they are looking at definitely having a woman director, which obviously, you know, makes sense and would be a good thing.
And a bit overdue.
Certainly. Much like it's overdue to have a female lead character in the first place.
Yeah.
But interesting that you know, none of the names are certainly kind of major directors. You know, you've got a New Zealand director who hasn't really done much in the US, a TV director, and someone who's better known for writing. Although a name that's not on that list, but who I've heard is also linked, she was linked by Lexi Alexander, who herself is apparently not on the list, but Lexi Alexander reckons that Rachel Talalay is on the list, which, obviously, James, you will think of Rachel Talalay in terms of Tank Girl,
yes.
I would have assumed.
Absolutely.
But actually, recently, she has been establishing herself as, like, one of the absolute top level directors in TV.
Yeah,
because she's been doing a bunch of stuff in the US. But she directed the season finale two-parter of the last series of Doctor Who, and one episode in particular, Heaven Sent, which was the episode that was a one-hander with Peter Capaldi. I don't think it's unreasonable to say is very probably the best directed episode of Doctor Who that there's ever been. And she's also doing some Sherlock coming up as well.
Yeah,
she's kind of in demand.
Yeah, it's interesting to see her career like going that way again. Like, you, after Tank Girl,
she's kind of had this second wind. Yeah.
Yeah, like I love Tank Girl, but yeah, by any reasonable sort of assessment, it's a career killing film. So it's interesting
which it
to see.
Which was, I mean.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah, but you know, it's taken her 25 years to come back, but I'm happy she has.
But she, I mean, you know, certainly judging by recent evidence of stuff that she's done, she's a very good director, and certainly someone who I'd like to see given that job.
Oh yeah, I'd pick her over any of the three on that list, certainly.
Yeah, but you know, this is all leaks and speculation rather than anything firm. So. But as a Joe-esque segue, one bit of director news that does seem to be actual confirmation rather than just speculation is that Doug Liman, is it Liman or Lehman?
I've always said Liman.
is now shock horror, not directing Gambit. It's almost as if that Gambit film is never going to happen.
That is the official, that is the podcast official stance on Gambit, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is the film is not happening ever.
Gambit is not happening ever. So he's moving on to another film which has always seemed like it has a definite chance of definitely happening. Which I believe what it's being referred to as now is Dark Universe. But what it basically is Justice League Dark.
Yeah, like if it does happen, there's no way they're going to call it Justice League Dark, because that brand cannot stand any dilution at the moment.
Well, also, you can't really have Justice League Dark. It would have to be Justice League Even Darker. But, I mean, to be honest, it was a terrible name for a comic in the first place. It launched as part of the New 52, and what it basically... I mean, I think they should have actually just called the comic something like Vertigo, because what it basically was them bringing several magic-themed characters who had been around... Well, some of them were older, but essentially, you know, a lot of them had peaked around the kind of late 80s in terms of popularity, and then they all moved over to Vertigo when the Vertigo imprint got created, because that's where DC put all of their kind of supernatural and magical stuff. But then as part of the New 52, Vertigo as a universe, while Vertigo does exist as a publishing imprint, it doesn't exist as a universe, in inverted commas, anymore. So they just folded them all back into DC. So you're talking about John Constantine and Zatanna, and is the Phantom Stranger in there, and Madame Xanadu and Deadman, and just basically all the kind of mostly quite cool DC's magic-based characters banding together as a team. It's a decent enough comic, and basically ever since the comic launched, it's been talked about as a possible movie. But it's always been talked about in terms of Guillermo del Toro being attached, who is obviously a pretty perfect choice to do this. But apparently he's now not doing it, and Doug Liman is coming over to do it instead. Which, you know, I mean...
Doug Liman, you would probably describe as a sort of... what's the phrase? Don't want to say like jobbing feature
like a, like
director,
like a
journeyman director.
Maybe.
Yeah, like he's but he doesn't turn in trash.
I mean, he's done some things that are. I mean, like genuinely, I think Edge of Tomorrow stand as like one of the best non superhero sci-fi action films of this current era. It's a great film.
Yeah, I only watched it a couple of weeks ago actually, and I was like blown away. I was like, oh, everyone was right, it turns out.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I was kind of put off it by Tom Cruise, because
a lot of people held off on it, but actually even Tom Cruise is great. It's like any external prejudices you might have about Tom Cruise because of the fact that he's a scary high-ranking figure in a terrifying cult. But he is really, really great in that film, and exactly, you know, the right kind of casting for it. And it's just, oh man, it's just like, it's a movie that is like watching what it's like to play a video game. It's just so well put together.
Yeah. And what else did Doug Liman do? I remember liking Go.
Born Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jumper, which wasn't very
good. Yeah, see, some of the, like,
Swingers was his debut.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I liked, but always felt it could be about twice as good as it was. Like, it was okay. Mm. It felt like a waste of the concept.
Mm.
Like, so there, you know, there are films at every tier on his slate, and he's never done anything that's a complete disaster, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. So, you know, it could be fine. I mean, it's just the fact that, I mean, he's moved from one film that's definitely not going to happen to another film that I think probably isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
I struggle to see how you can really make that work. It does feel like something that would be better as a TV show.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, if it does happen, if TV's John Constantine, Matthew Ryan, is going to make it over to play him in the movie as well. We could end up with our third live-action John Constantine. Or alternatively, they could always bring Keanu into it.
If they brought back Keanu, that would be my... I would buy my ticket the day they announced it.
It's going to be... I mean, again, we will have to get to Constantine on the...
Constantine.
At some point. Constantine. Sorry, yeah, the film is called Constantine. And that's going to be an interesting one, because that's... don't want to spoil it too much, but that is a film that is simultaneously one of the worst adaptations of a comic, but also I really, really like it as a film. Just like, if you forget that it's supposed to be a Hellblazer film, I think it's a great film, and I think his character's really great in it, and he's really great.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, I would see a Justice League Dark movie that had Keanu as John Constantine. Because you're never going to get a perfect movie version or a perfect TV version of that character from the comic anyway. So, you know, you might as well. But anyway, it's all irrelevant because the movie's definitely not happening. But what it does do is it moves Gambit even more into definitely not happening territory.
Yep.
I think. We should have some kind of gamble on, and we should kind of have like some kind of forfeit if the Gambit movie does actually ever get released.
The forfeit is that we go and watch it.
Yeah, there is that. So you heard it here first. If a Gambit movie comes out, we will watch it. That's our promise to you on Cinematic Universe. And if the podcast has ended because by the time the Gambit movie comes out, the universe is in a slow heat death, we will still resurrect the podcast to go and see it. Okay, so probably one of the most talked about pieces of news, although again, I think it is still kind of leaks and speculation rather than confirmed news. But it was a topic I think we were always going to cover, so we should in at least some way, is the sort of bubbling controversy around the fact that it now looks fairly certain that Zendaya, is it Zendaya or Zendaya?
Again, I've always said it's Zendaya.
So bad with names.
this just proves how old we are, because I gather that she is actually famous.
Is she actually famous? Okay. with the kids. She's famous with the young people.
With someone.
Okay. Well, yeah, so it seems that Zendaya is very probably playing Mary Jane Watson in Spider-Man Homecoming. And as often happens in these situations, racists have decided to be annoyed about this and come up with spurious justifications for their reasoning. And I've seen Dan Slott getting into arguments with people on Twitter about it, although, you know, Dan Slott really needs to just generally not get into arguments with people on Twitter because I don't think it's good for his blood pressure.
No.
And, like, there are people who are trying to say that because Mary Jane has visually always had red hair and been white, that that is an integral part of her character or whatever you want to call it. Now, I think I can say with some certainty that if you combine me and James, then I would be willing to bet that there are very few people, and Dan Slott is one of them, to be fair, who could speak more authoritatively on the subject of Spider-Man and Spider-Man history than us. I don't want to big us up too much, and I'm not saying I know everything about Spider-Man in his entire 50-year history, but I think between us, we've got a pretty good handle of what's true and what's not true about Spider-Man that we can back up with actual historical knowledge.
Yes.
And so I would therefore like to say that it is the official position of this podcast, and that anyone who disagrees with it is just flat out factually wrong, that there is absolutely nothing about the character or personality or history of Mary Jane Watson that has anything to do with her ethnicity or hair colour.
Yeah.
At all. It is just completely irrelevant to everything that makes her character. You can describe, and I did this on Twitter, I went through and described what I think are the fundamental actual character points of MJ, both when she first appeared and then in the kind of various versions that she's gone through, because she has gone through changes in terms of being, you know, the kind of the party girl friend in those early kind of Pete and Harry stories, to being, you know, wife of a superhero and how she deals with that and all of that.
Yeah,
and
90s like, mopey wife is not my favourite version of MJ, it's fair to say.
And none of it, like, is changed in any way if she's not a red-haired white person.
No, I mean, the point worth remembering is that there are a lot of characters with red hair in comics, and it is because it was an easy colour to print. Like, that is the reason Mary Jane had red hair. Because he already had a blonde girlfriend and already had a brunette girlfriend and needed another girlfriend.
I had noted on Twitter, actually, that it does seem interesting that of the various characters who, you know, and there's nothing wrong with this at all, have been race-swapped recently, it does seem that an inordinate amount of them are redheads. It's like, why don't they change some of the blonde characters? And I was mainly referring to Wally West, Jimmy Olsen, and in this case, MJ. However, it's, you know, as you say, I mean, yeah, there are reasons why characters have certain hair colours in comics. Also, there are reasons why so many characters are white in original Spider-Man comics, and it's because it's from the 1960s. And, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming is set in Queens. Queens is literally, I believe, like the most ethnically diverse urban area in the entirety of the United States. Like, it is ridiculous. And actually, and I went back and looked at some of the high school scenes in Amazing Spider-Man, because I had a vague recollection of kind of what some of the scenes looked like, you know, like when he was kind of being, when he was having his fight with Flash and when he was kind of in the corridor and stuff. And even in Amazing Spider-Man, that school is unrealistically white. It really, like, they do have a few ethnic minority characters kicking around in the background. And I can understand, like, with that film, obviously, you know, you've got Andrew Garfield as Peter and you've got the opportunity to have Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, so you do that. And then your only other character who is a named character in the high school is Flash Thompson. I can understand in that scenario not making Flash Thompson black, because then you've got a black guy who's the bully who's beating up on the hero. Mm. So I can understand the sensitivity around that, because those films aren't concerned with, like, Peter's high school life, so they don't need to fill in any of the other characters. But just from a background point of view, I think still think that that school looks conspicuously, like, not mixed enough, basically. But, you know, Homecoming is specifically focusing on Peter at high school and is building this cast of characters around him. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with several of them being a completely realistic ethnicity for the area of New York that they're living in.
I mean, the thing I always think with these, like, I don't want to use the word controversies because it's just, like, stupidity, like, closed mind thinking is what it actually is. But, like, it always strikes me that it's only ever skin colour that people get upset about. Mm. Like, they can say it's hair colour or they can say it's something else, but it's, like, for me, you can easily argue that one of Wolverine's defining character traits is that he's short, because that's why he's called Wolverine, is because Wolverines are small and ferocious.
Yeah.
And no one was like, this Hugh Jackman guy doesn't work as Wolverine because he's 6 foot. Like,
yeah.
It's just,
I mean,
nonsense.
I do remember it being commented on, but it certainly, there wasn't a fuss around.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, no one was doing, like, Hugh Jackman is not Wolverine.com or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and, like, even like Matt Murdock, like, he's, you know, he is a redhead, but Charlie Cox is basically not.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't matter, because, okay, maybe the redheadedness alludes to his Irish Catholic background, but even that, like, it's not integral to the character. You can do versions of it without that aspect of him, so...
Barry Allen's always been blonde. I've never seen anyone complain about Grant Gustin not being blonde in Flash.
I just think if you're, like, if you're getting upset about that sort of thing, like, don't... Just think about how you've reacted to other changes, and it will reveal, perhaps, prejudices that you should clean yourself of.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just, you know, I think people really are conflating this idea of, you know, kind of Mary Jane, the kind of flame-haired supermodel, as, you know, people are trying to see it as this integral thing, and it's just, you know, it's less important than it is for the character of Pepper Potts, and it's only important for the character of Pepper Potts because of her name. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I have absolutely no idea what Zendaya is like as an actress and whether she's right for the part of Mary Jane in that sense, although, you know, again, from kind of looking at the cast members and stuff, she certainly seems like someone who would fit the bill for the character. I mean, we don't know what direction the film's going to take it, and I kind of hope that actually what the film's going to do with this version of MJ is not immediately have her be the love interest and instead play her the way she was in her early appearances. I think would be more interesting than just the kind of... Because that's the other thing, right?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Spider-Man 2002 movie completely changed the nature of Peter and MJ's entire relationship anyway, by having them be next door neighbours who knew each other growing up, and Peter had been in love with her all of his life. Now, admittedly, elements of that do come from Ultimate Spider-Man, but you know, Ultimate Spider-Man was changing like a 30-year character history to do an alternative version. So if people weren't going to get bent out of shape about the character being changed to such a significant extent, and we've already talked on our Spider-Man episodes how Kirsten Dunst's MJ character-wise bears so little relation to the MJ of the comics.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, we've already had a very bad almost unrecognizable version of Mary Jane. Like, we went into this in some depth in the last two Spider-Man podcasts, so let's not go over it too much. But like, the original MJ was a party girl, and the comics, the movie MJ was basically Gwen Stacy, like, nice girl love interest.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, they did reveal in the comics, didn't they, that Mary Jane was the girl next door.
Yeah, that was the whole thing, was that, yeah, because they had the retcon of, yeah.
Yeah, the very stupid retcon.
That she always knew he was Spider-Man because she'd seen him climbing out the window one day and stuff. But the whole thing about him knowing who she was, you know, the whole point about when he first meets MJ is you have this running plot thread of Aunt May's friend is trying to set him up on a blind date and he's not interested and he keeps not meeting her, and then he finally does and you get the famous final page reveal, the Tiger jackpot line. Again, I mean, I don't know if it was you who said on Twitter or maybe it was somebody else, it's like, you know, really, when you talk about defining characteristics of Mary Jane, actually, no, I think it was somebody said it in reply to me when I was talking about the characteristics. All I really thought the defining characteristic of Mary Jane was saying the word tiger a lot.
I mean, to be...
Like, it doesn't matter what ethnicity you are to do that.
Like, to be fair, what I've seen of Zendaya, she looks to me like she has the attitude of a young Mary Jane as I would imagine her.
Mm.
Like, the comics version has always been very forward and confident, and that admittedly masks like problems at home or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, that's her character, and it's something the Kirsten Dunst version never really did. Whereas if you look at Zendaya, you think that's a character who is comfortable and confident with herself.
Mm.
So like, I don't know what she's like as an actress, but purely on that level, there's nothing about her that makes me go, well, she can't do MJ.
Yeah.
So yeah,
we are in favour of this development, so long as she turns out to be good. but yeah, it's just, I mean, yeah, we don't need to get into it too much, but it's just, it is obviously based in certain other prejudices, and people are scrabbling to find the justification for it. But it's just, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, but speaking as someone who probably knows these characters better than these people do, the justification doesn't hold up. It doesn't hold any water whatsoever. And we know that as people who are listening to this podcast, we're almost certainly preaching to the converted, and you guys know as well how ridiculous it is. But I think we just wanted to get that one on record.
Yeah.
And so still in the Marvel universe, but in the purely Marvel universe rather than the Marvel-Sony crossover... although actually, well, we're not certain if this is technically in the Marvel Universe, because I'm not sure it's going to count as canonical, but it's very excellent anyway. We've just had released a special feature. I think it's one of the special features for the Civil War release, but Marvel seem to be doing a thing now of actually putting the bonus features out digitally. And using some of them to actually push the digital release to promote
the digital release. Yeah, it was shown at Comic-Con as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it was it was recorded, it was filmed during the filming of Thor Ragnarok. I should say what we're talking about, which is this bonus feature for Civil War, which is basically what Thor was doing during Civil War. But yeah, I do find it interesting now that they've realised that so few people buy DVDs and Blu-rays now that special features have to become a digital thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a funny little short, obviously just done as a little gag thing, as I say, you know, while they were off filming Ragnarok. And that's also why Mark Ruffalo is in it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the one-shots they used to do, which were excellent and sadly dried up recently.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, have they done one since Agent Carter? Oh, Return of the King was after that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that was the last one.
Was it called Return of the King?
Yeah,
The Trevor.
Yeah, I think that was on. Can't remember what it was on, but they haven't done one for the last few releases. So
yeah,
it's good that they now have.
Yeah, and it is. But it's basically it's just Thor hanging out in Australia, having moved in with a guy who's played by an actor called Daly Pearson, who I think previous podcast guest Andrew Ellard has been working with him recently because he mentioned him on Twitter that he was in this guy. Yeah, it's just very silly and very funny because it's doing the really obvious but always works thing of putting a character like Thor in a normal everyday environment, and it's just got so many ridiculous silly little gags in it, and Chris Hemsworth hasn't quite got his accent up to scratch in it. Like he does lapse Australian quite a bit in it, so you can tell it's obviously in a bit of downtime from filming, but it's just really funny. It's the reason why it may not be canonical is simply by, well, no, it definitely isn't canonical. Firstly, because it's ludicrous, and secondly, because Bruce Banner's in it as well. But it's supposed to be taking place during Civil War, but Bruce Banner's in it.
That doesn't mean it's not canonical.
I think it probably does.
He has a phone call from Tony Stark, who is presumably telling him, like, stay in New Zealand or stay in Australia.
So we reckon that canonically, Tony knows where Hulk is. And so Hulk hasn't, you know, disappeared in his jet, but Tony knows where he is.
Yeah.
And is just not telling everybody else.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So it could be canonical. But either way, it also means that Thor knows. If it is canonical, it means Thor knows about Thanos, because that's... Well, that was probably my favourite joke in the whole thing, actually, which I won't. It's on YouTube, so you know, it's not like you have to buy anything to get it. You can go and watch it on YouTube, and it's on Marvel's Twitter and stuff. You've probably, to be honest, you're listening to this podcast. You've seen it already. We don't even need to tell you about it, but it's very good. And we've had some pictures from filming of Thor.
There's a potential spoiler in one of those pictures. So if you don't want to hear a potential spoiler for Thor Ragnarok, like skip ahead a minute or two. But
yeah, it's in terms of character appearance, which is that Doctor Strange is in it. Also, I didn't know if Loki was definitely in it as well, but it also confirms that Loki... Maybe it was already confirmed that Loki was in Ragnarok.
I mean, it would be mad if he wasn't. They couldn't do it without him, could they?
Yeah, no. Exactly. But it does confirm that he definitely is. But you've got Thor and Loki in civilian clothes in what I think is New York, or is it...
I believe it is New York, yeah.
Yeah, which... And some newspaper headlines with Thor on them and Loki on them, which looks interesting. This feels to me like stuff that's going to be from like late in the film, like setting up future stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I know so little about what's going on with Ragnarok anyway, but it feels to me like something that's going to be from after whatever happens with the main.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you remember, the status quo at the end of Dark World is that Loki is dead, or Thor believes Loki is dead, and he's impersonating Odin. So this comes from presumably quite far. I wonder if the end of the movie, or any part of the movie even, is going to involve the... Like, there was a famous Neil Gaiman pitch for Thor, which was that the Asgardians, having gone through Ragnarok, are incarnated on Earth as sort of regular humans. Mm. And I wonder if that's what's going on there.
Mm,
like that would explain why they're in civilians. I believe there's a thing about how Anthony Hopkins is going to be a sort of like crazy Burman New York.
Oh, right.
Who think like people just think he's like he thinks he's Odin because he's crazy, but he actually is. So I mean,
so kind of like what Mark Miller ended up doing with Ultimate. Yeah.
So if they do that, that would be quite interesting.
Yeah, that could be, and it would be. I guess it would be a way of having Thor and indeed everyone related to Thor off the table until it's time to bring them back for either the first or second part.
Yeah, and you can imagine like that would tie in with Doctor Strange as well. Like, you know, if he's lost his powers and he needs to talk to someone mystical, that's your guy.
Yeah, I wonder if it'll make me care about Doctor Strange. I don't know. Listen, I mean, you know, the film's coming out soon. It could be fantastic. I could be absolutely eating my words after it. And, you know, I could go and see Doctor Strange, and it could turn out to be like it could turn out to be as surprisingly enjoyable as Ant-Man was.
To be fair, I would have said the same about Thor. Like,
yeah, you know, true. Before that came out
8 years ago, I was going, I don't really care about Thor. And now I'm like, oh, it's Thor.
Yeah.
So, you know.
True.
Oh, actually, while we're on Thor, we should say Natalie Portman has also confirmed that she is done with Marvel.
Yes.
Which, although, in my opinion, is two movies too late.
Well, it does feel a little bit like, it feels a little more like when you get dumped by someone and then you say that you didn't really fancy them anyway.
Well, she never wanted to, like, she wanted out. Pretty much during the first Thor movie, she was like, why am I here? And in the second one, she was like, why am I here?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I say, I mean, I don't know if they would have had much intent to bring the character back anyway based on how things had gone previously. It is interesting that she's come out to basically confirm that she's not going to do any more. It will be interesting to see how they deal with the Thor and Jane thing, but I think the answer will be to quickly move Thor on, probably to Valkyrie. But, you know, given the way that they've had Jane in the background and had her be talked about in the Avengers films.
Yeah, I mean, there was a rumour going around for a while that in Age of Ultron, like, was going to have a scene where Thor talks about being dumped by Jane. But that didn't materialise. Like, not whether they shot it, whether it was in the script and they changed it, like, you know, it never turned up.
So, farewell, Jane Foster. We barely knew ye. But hopefully your intern will stick around.
Hashtag Darcy and Captain Marvel.
So, yeah, we should bob, I was going to say, back over to DC. Yeah, because we did talk about Justice League Dark. But we should bob back over to DC for a couple of quick things. I did talk about how Suicide Squad was doing quite well the last time I... Oh, it did. Actually, yeah, I said earlier that we hadn't done a news roundup, but we did do it. I did do a news roundup on the last minisode. But even by the time I recorded that at a point when Suicide Squad had made about 300 million. By the time we released it, it had already hit about 500 million, so that was already out of date. And it's now topped 600 million, so... It is actually edging to... Well, I don't think it will hit them now because we are in the later phase, but it's edged its way towards Guardians of the Galaxy numbers. So, it's certainly not a flop, and despite, you know, the reviews, the marketing campaign, including... I don't know if anyone else keeps getting a promoted tweet with a quote on it that looks like it's come from a review, but if you Google the quote and the word Suicide Squad, all you get are links to the Twitter feed and the official Facebook page. So they've made up a review quote for Suicide Squad. But however they've done it, that marketing campaign has worked and people have gone to see that film, and, you know, it's not had Deadpool levels of sustaining it in terms of the word of mouth, meaning that people keep going, but people have been going to see it, and the negative reviews haven't really put people off.
Well, he did. So. David Ayer did make it for the fans, by which he means people with no critical faculties.
We could spend all kinds of time talking about this, but this idea that I always find it patronising when they say, "Oh, we didn't make it for the critics; we made it for the fans." Because what you're basically saying is, "Yeah, we made it for people who will give us money, no matter what dross we turn out."
But it's, I can't remember if I've done this for the fans,
but it was, you know, also actually good.
Yeah, like, I can't remember if you've done this rant before, because I do it a lot, but there is not a single critic out there who doesn't fucking love movies.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You don't become a critic unless you want movies to be good.
Yeah, and with the odd exception, like, superhero movies are enough of an established thing now that anyone who gets sent to review a superhero movie probably is already inclined to like them if they're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might get the odd example where, like, The Guardian or someone will have somebody review one who their default stance is, there are too many of these movies and they're shit and I'm above it all. But in general, like, you know, someone like, you know, a Robbie Collin or a Chris Hewitt or people like that.
Even Mark Kermode.
Who are in... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Mark Kermode. You know, he... Mark Kermode bloody loved Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like, there are people who like these films who can still review them with critical faculties, you know? Including us.
Yeah.
So Suicide Squad. I mean, I don't know if there'll be a Suicide Squad 2, but there'll definitely be a Harley Quinn movie, mm-hmm. I think, will be the main
thing. I'd be surprised if Will Smith hasn't got some option somewhere as well. Like,
yeah.
They'd want him back.
They may not want Jared Leto back.
Yeah.
Especially seeing as he seems intent on burning his bridges. I think he seems to have done what a lot of people like us have done and assumed that the film was going to be a flop based on those early reviews.
And done so his he's best decided... to disassociate himself, yeah.
Yeah, so he's disassociated himself from it before it became apparent that it's actually a hit. So now he's a bit stuck. But from the sound of it, because I still haven't seen it, it doesn't sound like that's going to be a great loss.
I can't wait for you to see it. You should do a special podcast just on that.
I should, yeah. Maybe. Maybe that'll be our next special. And we've had the first trailer for the 50th anniversary celebration of Batman 66, which is an animated original movie called Return of the Caped Crusaders. And it actually features Adam West and Burt Ward as the voices of Batman and Robin.
Which sounds great. Except for the fact that it sounds bad.
Yeah, it would have been maybe better to do it in like the 70s or the 80s. although I don't know what state Burt Ward was in around that time. But yeah, I mean, they don't sound like the Batman and Robin of old. But it doesn't seem to bother people who listen to Doctor Who audio dramas that have actors from 30 odd years ago trying to play the same characters. I think this one, I think if they get the tone right and if it's anything like the Batman 66 comics, this one could be good fun. Hopefully they won't do a Killing Joke and retcon some horrendous Batman and Batgirl sex scene into it. Because particularly with Adam West doing the voice, I think that would be...
I mean, legitimately, terrifying. I watched the trailer and I just thought the timing in this is all wrong because it's like they haven't... It looks to me like they haven't recorded it as live. Like, they've just gone into the studio separately and recorded their lines, so there's not much chemistry. Like, maybe that's just for the promo trailer, I don't know. But
yeah,
my impression of it was, like, these are two very old actors sort of struggling to do a medium they're not necessarily known for. Like, I know Adam West has done some animation and
animation
stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but he's never been asked to carry something like this, so yeah, we'll see. I mean, I imagine we'll cover it for the podcast, maybe even when it comes out. Like, it's depending on how busy it is when it happens, when it gets released.
I mean, people have asked us if we're ever going to do, one of the DC original movies after we did Planet Hulk, and I think we were non-committal about whether we might look at Killing Joke, and then obviously all of that controversy happened with Killing Joke, and I just don't think any of us wanted to even watch the thing. I think if we were going to do one of the Batman ones, this could be an interesting one to do. So we may pencil that one in for. Is it due out later this year?
Quite
soon. I mean, it would be daft not to do it in 2016 if it's for Batman 66, because it would be 50th anniversary if they do it this year. So
yeah.
But yeah, so that's Return of the Caped Crusaders, which could be awful or could be a bit of fun. Okay, so we'll quickly rattle through a few more pieces just to round off, because we have gone on, I think, for longer than we expected to. Vin Diesel has revealed that the Guardians of the Galaxy will be in Avengers Infinity War, which isn't really a surprise.
Because... Surprising no one besides Marvel's lawyers.
Yeah. So, great, basically, I think is the answer to that. Unless, as I speculated worryingly on a recent podcast, if it turned out that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was dreadful, that would just be the worst thing.
Nah.
That's not going to happen. That's not gonna
no
happen.
Chance.
Yeah. We're very close to getting Luke Cage. I think there are... Why have you mentioned that there are junkets?
Because I want to say there are junkets in 2 weeks, and Netflix is sending me to Paris to cover them.
Okay, so James is going to Paris to cover Luke Cage junkets.
So I just wanted to brag.
So it's going to be released on the 30th of September.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I'm sneakily hoping to record the roundtable so I can make you stick them out on the podcast, but I'll see what happens.
Cool. So that will be... I think even as someone who, you know, hasn't been as fond of the Netflix stuff, I did enjoy that Luke Cage trailer, and I think that's one that I'll be inclined to give the first episode a go in a way that I probably won't be with Iron Fist. But we shall see.
I'm very excited. Yeah, 30th of September, that drops on Netflix.
And finally, something that a show that I think we've maybe mentioned once in passing on this podcast, which shows the level of interest in it, but Powers has been cancelled. Powers, the Sony PlayStation exclusive. I think it was on FX over here, but it was in the US, it was PlayStation, has been cancelled. Nobody was really watching it. Apparently the second season, they actually did the storyline. I think they did a bit of a Preacher, and the first season was actually kind of like a prequel to the story that you get in the comics. And then in the second season, they did the story that was the first volume of the comics. But it doesn't matter because nobody was watching it. Problem with Powers is if they'd done a TV show like in about 2005 when the comic was still good and interesting, then maybe that might
maybe if they'd done it before Heroes as well, because that was what it needed to be, really, wasn't it? That kind of show.
So yeah, that's a shame for anyone who was a fan of that. But I mean, if you were watching Powers, feel free to give us a shout and tell us what you thought of it. But as I say, you know, I'm someone who likes Brian Michael Bendis comics, and even I never bothered even seeking out the first episode of Powers.
I mean, I want to tell PlayStation, like, it's okay if you're not making TV. Like, not everyone has to make TV. It's like when Yahoo made Community. And then they did that, and then, like, a year later went, we're shutting down our TV division because we don't really know what we're doing.
Well, the problem with PlayStation TV was that it was only available on PlayStation.
Yeah.
And it's like, even, you know, Amazon have their exclusive stuff, but you can watch Amazon Prime Video on devices that aren't made by Amazon. And I think that's something that Sony didn't really think about when doing their own... content. You know, all other content providers are device agnostic, apart from iTunes, but they don't do original content. So yeah, okay, so that is basically I think pretty much all of the news from the last couple of weeks. Certainly all of the news that we, you know, noticed and thought was worth covering. I'm sure Joe will have spotted other things while he's away that he'll chastise us for not covering. But before we go, we'll just quickly, as we mentioned, we were given the suggestion by a listener, Louis Strong, to do some recommendations. He said for comics that don't have film adaptations, so wouldn't be recommended otherwise. Obviously, a lot of the things that we recommend don't have film adaptations themselves, because that's part of, you know, what we do is recommend something tangentially related. But I think there are some comics that we feel we can't see where the opportunity would be to give us an excuse to recommend them. And you guys know that, like, we'll take a pretty tenuous excuse to recommend something that we want to recommend. But with these, I think we may never find the excuse. So what we're going to do is we're each going to very quickly give a recommendation for something that we think, if you're the kind of person who listens to our recommendations and goes out and reads them, maybe give these comics a look. So, James, what is yours?
Yeah, mine is... I was unable to appear on the Scott Pilgrim podcast, but this is the comic I would have recommended for that, which is a manga series called Genshiken, which is kind of a slice of life sort of romantic comedy manga about a bunch of nerds in their university club. It's kind of like Scott Pilgrim without the fighting. And, like, it's not the sort of... I can't imagine there's a film we'd get to that we would in any way be able to recommend it. Like, not after Scott Pilgrim, and that would have been tenuous at best. So I'd like to just say to anyone, like, if you want to read something sort of non-superhero-y but still relatable, like, that's... It's one of my favourite series, and it's been going for years. Like, it's... More recently, it's become very strange. and moved quite far from its origins. But the original run, like the first 9 volumes, are some of the like most engaging, funny, like emotional comics that I've read pretty much ever. And I think, you know, I'd like to see more people reading it. So that's my recommendation for just if you want to read a comic, that's one I might thrust into your hands.
Okay. So for mine, and this is one where there may come a point where I could tenuously recommend this in relation to one of the characters who appears in it somewhere, but it's certainly not something that will ever be adapted. I actually won't go into too much detail about it because I am going to write, or I'm writing at the moment, an article for the site. It's going to be the next one in my comics that I think should be made into movies or TV shows, and here's how. But for those who don't read the website, which I'm sure there are some of you who don't, it's Hitman, which is from the mid to late 90s. It's the other great Garth Ennis series. I mean, well, Garth Ennis has a few like great series, but the striking thing is that he was actually doing Hitman pretty much exactly at the same time that he was doing Preacher. Like, the two ran pretty much concurrently. So between about 1996 and about 2000, 2001, like, Garth Ennis was writing the two best comics around. Because there are some, and I think I'm among them, who would even put Hitman above Preacher. It's not dissimilar in terms of some of its character stuff and some of its themes and what it's about, because it's a Garth Ennis comic, so it's about people who kill other people, and it's about male loyalty and comradeship and friendship, and it has war story flashbacks, and it has themes of Irish identity, in this case Irish-American identity. But what's unusual about it is the fact that it's set in the DC universe, and specifically it's set in Gotham City. And it's about Tommy Monaghan, who is a hitman who gets imbued with superpowers actually as part of a really bad early 90s DC crossover called Bloodlines. Ennis and the artist John McRae were actually on a run of a character called The Demon, and they introduced Tommy out of that. He was, you know, he first appears in a Demon annual as part of the Bloodlines crossover, and it was then, and then he appeared like in a couple of sort of one shots and specials before he then got his own series. So the interesting thing about it being set in Gotham is basically Tommy gets these superpowers. He has like X-ray vision and he can read minds, although he doesn't tend to use his powers that much, and he decides to only take on hitman contracts that involve metahumans, essentially. So he's not a baddie. Like, he is a killer, but he's even before getting his powers, he's been a hitman who he only considers people who he himself thinks are bad. So he doesn't go around shooting heroes, but he will go around shooting superpowered villains. And this does lead him to cross paths with the likes of Batman and Catwoman in one quite memorable arc.
I was going to say, it has one of the all-time funniest Batman moments.
Are you talking about him throwing up on Batman's shoes, or are you talking about the cat signal?
It's the throwing up on Batman's shoes, but yeah, the cat signal is also like great. I mean, I've read a bit of Hitman, and I always mean to go back and look at more of it, because it's probably, like, I'm not a huge Ennis fan, but of everything I've read of his, it's my favourite thing.
Yeah, it's got an arc that brings in the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern, and just makes, I'm amazed that DC let him get away with taking the current Green Lantern and making him a merciless figure of fun for 6 issues.
Does it do any worse than Frank Miller did in All-Star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder?
Oh, maybe not, actually. But that was out of continuity, so, but it's close. There is a line where Kyle Rayner gets described as a Keanu looking goof with a magic ring, which I think about sums up Carl Rain. But the interesting thing about it, actually, is that it kind of starts off with this, you know, relentless kind of... It's a violent, silly comedy, basically. It has that kind of tone. And I can see why that's kind of off-putting to some people. But then it gradually shifts the tone as it goes on. It does still have the jokes, and it does still have the lightness of touch. But about halfway through the series, it reaches a point where you can see that Ennis has decided he's going to start pushing it towards an end game, and also that he's started really caring about the characters. And all of a sudden, it starts to just edge in a more and more kind of tragic direction. And as I say, you know, it does still have the kind of the lightness and the weirdness, but... you know, it turns into a big old character-driven drama where bad things happen to characters that you really like, and it goes, you know, towards a pretty inevitable conclusion. It's an awesome series, kind of pretty much all the way through. There's a couple of arcs or issues that I'm slightly less keen on, but the main reason I prefer it over Preacher is that I think Tommy is a more engaging lead character than Jesse Custer. And like Preacher, it has a great supporting cast of characters. It does kind of make fun of superheroes, but then it also, about halfway through the series, has a single issue with Superman in it that is one of the best Superman stories ever told, in which Ennis is completely respectful of Superman because he's like the one superhero that Ennis likes. And in fact, you know, even if you don't necessarily want to go and read the series Hitman and start it from the beginning, go and find issue 34. It's completely self-contained and standalone. It won an Eisner for the best single issue that year. And it is just like, it is up there in like the top 10 or even 5 Superman stories ever in terms of completely nailing the character of Superman. It's just Superman having a conversation on a rooftop with Tommy for the entire issue. And it's fantastic. So yes, I would recommend reading all of Hitman. I think it's all on like Comixology and stuff, but if nothing else, go and read that one issue.
I will. Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have Joe now to go, right, well, so I actually have to segue from my own recommendation into doing that. I think that pretty much brings us to the end of this bonus episode. So we will be back next week with an episode of some kind, but we haven't entirely decided what that'll be yet. It will be probably another kind of fill-in. And then hopefully after then, I think Joe will finally have returned from his ridiculously long honeymoon. And we'll actually get back to doing regular episodes. We left the post-credit sting on the Batman one that led into what was supposed to be our next pre-record, but I think we'll just do as an ordinary episode next time. Which is the I've forgotten the actor's name.
David Hasselhoff.
Has it gone out of my head? Yeah. which is the David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So you can all look forward to that one.
just like we will. It's been roughly a year since we did Howard the Duck, hasn't it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So it's about time we went back into those kind of waters. but until then, you can find more episodes of the podcast at cinematicmultiverse.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or any other podcast app of choice. If you want to get in touch with us, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter at @CU_podcast. You can send us an email to cinematicuniversepod@gmail.com.
No one ever does that.
No, they don't. But you can if you want to. It'd be nice to hear from you. I'm doing this end spiel off the top of my head from all the times I've heard Joe do it. But I've remembered that I've left out that also you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse, as several fine people do, which really helps with the running costs of the podcast and all of that. And we appreciate that support. But we also appreciate those of you who listen without supporting on Patreon. Everyone who listens, we are very appreciative of. So thank you very much for that. And thanks for listening to this one, and we'll see you next week.
See you.